Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome into Outkick the Show. I'm your fearless leader, Clay Travis, back. A little bit red, perhaps. Fabulous weather down at the beach. I am here with you on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, rolling you into the NCAA tournament. Just did an interview with Ben Carson a little bit earlier in the morning. We're going to have a gambling special with me and Kelly Stewart, me and Kelly in Vegas on Wednesday to get you ready for the NCAA tournament. So everybody is prepared and ready for that entire process. The brackets are out. I'll give you my final four. I'm going to give you a pick in every game. I've done this for years. I don't think I did it last year. I might not have done it the year before, but old school Outkick crew knows that I think we did me and Todd Furman and Carissa Thompson did a live show from the Vegas casino in 2014, a decade ago, which is crazy now for me to think about that it's been a decade, that I've been doing a decade of television now. We did a live show from a Vegas casino back in 2014. And starting in that year, I think, maybe even starting the year a couple of years before, I would go out and bet every first-round NCAA tournament game. And we had some decent success on those bets. So for years now, I've been betting every NCAA tournament game all the way through. I'll give you my my picks on Wednesday for the entire first round of the NCAA tournament. But in advance, my picks for the Final Four, I've got Houston, I've got UConn, both as number one overall seeds advancing to the Final Four. I've got Tennessee. I can't quit them. And then a team that a lot of you have not watched and are going to know nothing about, but I've been very impressed by as I've watched them play a decent amount of games, including every game they played in the Western Conference tournament. The St. Mary's Gales, I believe, right? Aren't they the Gales? G-A-E-L-S. I've got St. Mary's as my fourth Final Four team. So Houston, UConn, Tennessee, St. Mary's are my Final Four. I understand everybody out there who says, oh my goodness, what are you thinking, Clay? You are crazy. But for continuing to pick Tennessee to make the Final Four, at some point, in theory, I'm going to be right. I don't know if it's going to be at this point in my life or if I don't know if it's going to be in later after I die. But sooner or later, if you make the NCAA tournament, I think Tennessee's made the NCAA tournament 25 times. Up there with the most NCAA tournament bids of all time to have never made a Final Four run. I know Alabama's in that mix. I know Missouri is in that mix. That is the ultimate list of sadness. In fact, Adam, if you can look up, shoot me. I've got Adam as my research assistant here to make sure I don't screw up facts too bad. Look up the list if you can and text it to me of the teams that have never made the Final Four despite having made the NCAA tournament over 20 times. I know that's a graphic that's been out there. Most NCAA tournament appearances without a Final Four, I feel like BYU, Missouri, Tennessee and Alabama are on that list as four of the teams that have all made it like over 25 times to have never made a Final Four run. Let's see, Adam, you can find that list. I'll hit it before the show is out. I encourage you, as always, fill out your bracket challenge. I'm sponsoring the bracket challenge at my kids' school. We've done a bracket challenge a lot at Outkick. I don't know if we have one officially up right now or not. But we certainly will be tracking all of the gambling, and again, we'll do a Wednesday show for everybody out there who wants to get their gambling analysis and picks with Kelly Stewart. We'll give you our best bets. I want to mention this, too. NFL free agency has been going on. It was going on all last week when I was down on 30A, God's Country, on the Florida Gulf Coast. Had an amazing time down there. I thought of everybody in free agency, all of the moves that have been made so far. And I'm not a big fan of the Titans spending whatever it was, $90 million to go sign Calvin Ridley. But I thought the biggest flaw was not so necessarily prevalent, right? I wasn't a fan of a lot of big money. But the team that I saw that I was impressed by the most was the Pittsburgh Steelers. I absolutely love what they did in getting Justin Fields for virtually nothing from the Chicago Bears, and also adding Russell Wilson virtually no cost because of the money that the Denver Broncos have already spent on him. This feels like, to me, what the essence of free agency should be. The Steelers, obviously, Kenny Pickett didn't work. They moved on from him, traded him to the Jags. Kenny Pickett is now down there, I think, with Mac Jones or whatever. He's been sent off into, sorry, he went to the Commanders. I can't even remember where Kenny Pickett went. Mac Jones went to the Jags. But they moved on from Kenny Pickett. The decision by the Steelers to have two guys who have shown, certainly Russell Wilson, is if he had just retired with Seattle, he would have been an NFL Hall of Famer. First ballot Hall of Famer. Nobody would have questioned it. He may become the first player to ever play his way out of the Hall of Fame if he doesn't rebound in a big way with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because the 2 years he had in Denver were not remotely Hall of Fame level performances. He was better in year two than in year one. But it seems quite clear that Russell Wilson is a borderline Hall of Famer right now. I still think he would get in. But if he had, let's say, an awful year with the Pittsburgh Steelers and never caught on as a starter again, to me, this is the reverse of Belichick-Brady. This would be, hey, maybe we should think higher of Pete Carroll and actually lower of Russell Wilson, whereas we think higher of Tom Brady and lower of Bill Belichick in the wake of the Brady departure. But you get him for virtually no risk. We know Mike Tomlin's going to get his team to a winning record. He's done it every year that he's been a coach with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We know that the Steelers haven't figured out how they're going to move on from Ben Roethlisberger. And so, as a result, why not get a couple of guys that have virtually no risk at all associated with them, no major monetary investment, let Justin Fields and Russell Wilson battle it out, decide which guy fits better in your offense. If neither of them work, you give them a couple of years, you move on, you go back into the draft and go get someone else. But if one of these guys works out, you get 4 or 5 years potentially of Russell Wilson still that could be decent, or even better than that, if Justin Fields somehow is able to pan out. Remember, they've got Arthur Smith now as their offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. Arthur Smith made $100 million for Ryan Tannehill, who I don't know who's going to end up signing Ryan Tannehill, but basically Arthur Smith revitalized Ryan Tannehill's career. Why couldn't he do that with Russell Wilson or with Justin Fields? One of those guys, I feel like, is going to pan out, and you have almost no risk at all. Best move of the entire NFL free agency so far, in my opinion, is in the Pittsburgh Steelers camp with adding Arthur Smith and then getting Justin Fields and Russell Wilson with no risk whatsoever at all associated with that. A couple of other things that are out there that I think are significant. Let's talk for a minute about the bloodbath hoax. Trump, clearly in Iowa, go vote Iowa. You've got a major primary for the Republican Party to go head-to-head against Sherrod Brown and potentially flip that in general, Senate seat overall. By the way, Adam, good work. Most NCAA tournament appearances without reaching a Final Four. Let me come back to the bloodbath discussion in a moment. This is the ultimate list of sadness. not counting this year's appearance, most NCAA tournament appearances all time without reaching a Final Four, BYU. BYU has been to the NCAA tournament 30 times. They've never made a Final Four. Now, let me say this, too. In BYU's defense, I don't think they would have been seeded to make the Final Four ever, right? And I don't even know, a secondary point here. Has BYU regularly even been seeded to make the Sweet 16? That is, have they ever been a top four seed? I can't remember them very often being a top four seed. So BYU, yes, has been to a lot of NCAA tournaments, but they've never really been seeded ever to make a run. So I think while that's a little bit sad, 30 appearances, that is pretty crazy. Xavier's made the Elite Eight. I know this program pretty well because I went to an A-10 school, GW. Now, I know Xavier now is in the Big East, but they were in the A-10 for a long time. I know they've made the Elite Eight. They've had a lot of talent. One of the best rivalries in college basketball is Xavier-Cincinnati in the state of Ohio. That Cincinnati City battle between Xavier and Cincinnati is absolutely fantastic. So Xavier, 29 NCAA tournament appearances. Mizzou, which is right next to Kansas and has as his ultimate rivalry the University of Kansas. I bet Kansas has been to 20 Final Fours. And by the way, stat on BYU, more than one game in a single tournament just once. Let me make sure that I get this right. Good work by Adam here. They had an Elite Eight run in 1981, BYU did. Obviously don't remember that. I was two. They've won one game in a tournament, more than one, just once since that Elite Eight run in 1981. But again, I don't think they've ever been seeded that high that I can remember as a major college basketball fan like I am. Missouri, 29 times. Probably the biggest kick in the teeth, and Missouri fans, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was when Missouri was seeded as a 2 seed and lost to a 15. I think that's probably the most difficult of the Missouri runs. Missouri has made the Elite Eight before as well, never having made it to the Final Four. They've been to 29 NCAA tournament appearances. And again, sitting basically as their big rival, Kansas. I know they're not both still in the same conference, but to have Kansas basketball constantly having the success that they've had, and Missouri has never been to the Final Four. Tennessee, I know this tortured tournament history very, very well. 25 times. I need to look up this because it is kind of incredible. Tennessee has made the Sweet 16 a ton and loses every time in the Sweet 16 but once. And Alabama is eerily similar, and they're next on the list. Let me hit you with the Sweet 16 failures. It's not that Tennessee hasn't won NCAA tournament games. And I was at the game that they lost to Michigan State in the Elite Eight when they had a really good chance. I mean, listen to this. Tennessee has made the Sweet 16 in 1998. Let's see. Usually it breaks it down by Sweet 16. Here we go. Tennessee made the Sweet 16. 2000, 2007, 2008, 2010, 2014, 2019, and 2023. So I don't know how many teams, 7 times since the 21st century started. That's a pretty good rate, right, to make the Sweet 16. I don't think there would be that many teams that have made more than 7 Sweet 16s in the 2000, maybe 15, something like that. That would be a good list. They've only won one of those games. And before that, they made the Sweet 16 in 1967 and in 1981. So what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Tennessee is 1-8 all time in NCAA tournament games. Do you know how hard that is to pull off? I mean, that is brutally difficult to find yourself in a situation where you could make the Sweet 16 that many times and almost lose them all. So Tennessee's only had one opportunity to ever make the Final Four. Alabama, 24 times, very similar to Tennessee, also only one Elite Eight. Creighton, this bracket is interestingly set up so that Creighton and Tennessee would meet in the Sweet 16. I don't know how many Elite Eights Creighton has had, not very many, I'm quite confident. And then Utah State. Again, historically, I would bet Creighton and Utah State have not been seeded that many times to make the Sweet 16 and make a Final Four run. So this is not counting this year's appearance. So BYU will have a 31st NCAA appearance, Tennessee 26, Alabama 25, Creighton 25, and Utah State 24. I would say that is the ultimate list of sadness out there. Okay, I want to come back to, thanks for that work, Adam. I want to come back to the bloodbath hoax. Trump was appearing in Ohio. Go vote in your primary tomorrow, Ohio. You have a big decision to make on who your Senate representative is going to be, in particular, to run against Sherrod Brown and potentially flip back Senate control to Republicans, given that there's going to be a pickup in West Virginia. Just need one additional Senate seat. Unlikely that Republicans are going to lose in Texas or in Florida, meaning just one pickup, Ohio, Montana, Pennsylvania, certainly Arizona, Nevada. There are so many different states out there where you could get a pickup. Michigan, depending on how the breakdown goes as we get closer to 2024. But go vote in that primary. Trump said accurately something that I've said on Clay and Buck, which is if China moves their making of electronic vehicles, EVs, to Mexico, they have a very good chance to try to dodge tariffs based on the law and the way it's created, is my understanding. And so it's not necessarily unexpected that China could start making EVs in Mexico. And Trump used that as an example and said that could be a bloodbath if he's not elected for the auto industry. Obviously, in the Midwest, the auto industry is very powerful and has a lot of political muscle. Makes a lot of sense that Trump would be going after many people who work in manufacturing in the Midwest. This is not remotely a controversial statement. There are, I've probably used the word bloodbath a ton in my career, because a bloodbath is a massive crushing of your business. This is probably a phrase that you've used all the time. We use them in elections. We use them in sports terminology. That, man, if somebody gets fired and everybody else gets fired around him, man, it's a bloodbath at insert school or university here. This is not some sort of actual call for violence. And claiming that it is, while not thinking or analyzing the context under which the commentary occurred, is evidence of what I believe you have got to expect a lot of for 2024. Democrats are desperate. They can't really defend Joe Biden's record. He's got a 38% approval rating, according to Gallup, which is lower than any incumbent president at this point in his presidency ever. And so they're going to try to run the same playbook that they ran against Trump in 2016 and in 2020. Namely, they're going to lie. And this is not very different, in my mind, than the very fine people Charlottesville lie that they told. They're going to run this playbook with everything that they've got, because they can't defend Biden. I think that there is, and we're going to be talking a lot about this on Clay and Buck here in a little bit. And by the way, the reason I'm early today is because I'm going to be on with Martha McCollum on Fox News right after, scheduled to be on with her right after Clay and Buck ends today. So I'm coming with you earlier today on this Monday. I don't think honestly, that this is going to work, partly because I think people are a lot smarter now about the way lies are told. I think that Twitter, with Elon Musk now in ownership, is actually pointing out how much of all of this coverage is BS and how much of it is fake. And so I don't think it's going to have the same level of success. In fact, I actually think it's going to reverberate, rebound back in favor of Trump, because I think people are going to look at it in context. I saw Stephen A. Smith share a clip from Elon Musk saying, wait a minute, that's not what he actually said. Anyone with a functional brain can understand what Trump was saying, because it's not even remotely complicated. It's not even that inflammatory of language to say that there's going to be a bloodbath if he's not reelected in the auto industry. Yeah, I think he 100% believes that. I think a lot of manufacturing workers in the Midwest believe that as well. So to me, this is desperation. And it's evidence that they don't really have a campaign strategy other, this is, I wrote about this a lot in American Playbook, other than trying to rerun what they've done in 2016 and in 2020. And I don't think that works, because I think a lot of people have been red-pilled since Trump came on the scene in 2016, and they recognize how much the media lies and how dishonest they all are. And so I really don't think this is going to work.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Understand, steel yourself for all of these lies associated with the bloodbath in general. A couple of other stories that I wanted to hit. Fannie Willis case. I told you on Friday, I think it was, not Friday, I was off, on Wednesday or Thursday, that I expected this result to come down as soon as I saw the judge, McAfee, toss a couple of these cases, these charges against Trump. I said, oh, okay. It's going to come down to his analysis of the conflict standard. And I said, you can go back and watch. I said, he's going to set a high standard, needing to see actual conflict. He's going to decide that actual conflict hasn't been met and that the appearance of impropriety is not enough. And that's how he's going to allow her to stay on the case. It's going to be political cowardice, but this is what he's going to do. And guess what happened? That's exactly what he did. The evidence, as I've laid out for months now, all militates that she should have been kicked off of this case. Because to me, the preponderance of the evidence shows that she lied under oath, that there was an actual conflict, that there was a relationship between these two that existed before she hired him to come on and work on this case. But Nathan Wade has now resigned, and Fannie Willis is going to try to continue. I think ultimately she's going to end up facing criminal charges for perjury. I really do believe this, and obstruction. And I also believe that she's going to lose her DA job. She may lose her law license. She's certainly going to end up off of this case. I don't think this is even going to be that challenging of an end result. Ultimately, the Georgia case, I don't believe, will ever go to trial. I don't think either that we'll get a resolution in Washington, D.C. I also don't think that we'll get a resolution in South Florida. And now we've got the Alvin Bragg case pushed back. That happened, I believe, on Friday. So we may not start any of these trials, even New York City, until well into May, and I think New York City is the only one that feels likely to end up with a result, and we may not even get a result there. I want to play this clip, by the way. I asked Ben Carson, I believe we have this clip. I talked with Ben Carson earlier. We'll have a full interview up. Spent about 15 or 20 minutes with him this morning. He was in Nashville. I asked Ben Carson a question here that I want you guys to be able to hear. Let's listen to my interview with Ben Carson. And you think about him at 81 years old. He'll be 82 years old at the time of the election, and he would like to serve until he's theoretically 86 years old. Does he seem mentally and physically fit to you? 75% of the American public basically says that he does not seem mentally and physically fit. I know you're not his direct doctor, but you obviously observe him as others do. How would you assess his mental and physical fitness?
Well, I would say you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see that he's deteriorating pretty quickly. And all you have to do is go back and look at different video clips of him speaking. Over the years, you can see a marked change. And, you know, there are a lot of people who have those kind of changes as they age. It varies from person to person. But we should be mature enough as a society to recognize when it's happening and take appropriate measures. You know, we should be talking about mental status examinations for people at a certain age who have high government responsibility, because it's not just their life, it's the lives of the many people who are being governed that have to be taken into consideration.
Okay, that's Dr. Ben Carson. You just heard him analyzing the health of Joe Biden. Interesting conversation that we had. I continue to believe that that's the biggest challenge. That's why the bloodbath controversy has emerged. Democrats are aware that Joe Biden, in the mind of about 75% of the American public, doesn't have the physical or mental capacity to be president. And if that's the case, you can't defend Joe Biden. You have to go after Donald Trump. And that's why the entire 2024 campaign is going to feature lies like the bloodbath lie. And you should just prepare yourself for them. Just tune out, if you would. I think a lot of people already have made up their mind. I don't think money being spent is going to change things very much there. But I do think that you just have to prepare yourself for this. Final bit of news today. Deadspin has collapsed again. This news came down on, I believe it was Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken, that Deadspin was sold to a European company. We don't know who the European company is, but we know that upon the sale, they fired every single Deadspin employee effective immediately. And I'm going to write on this. I sent it like several thoughts on Twitter. You can go read what I thought about this. But to me, this is a fascinating 20-year, roughly, window in sports media. And referencing the direction that we have gone and using Deadspin as a proxy for sports media, but also media at large. And let me just give you a little bit of a background, and this is part of what I will write. I'm not sure I'll write it this week because the NCAA tournament's going on. I've got a bunch of different meetings. I'm going to be super busy running around taking care of all of this surrounding the NCAA tournament. But think about this. When Deadspin started was the fall of 2004. We're now in the fall of 24, 20 years. I started writing online at the exact moment, basically, that Deadspin was created as a sports blog. 20 years. And you can write and say a lot of things about what I've said and done over 20 years, but I started as a writer. I wrote for basically five straight years before I was ever on radio. And certainly now, 15 years later, I'm on daily radio all the time. I'm on daily television all the time. And some of you probably have found me on social media videos, on YouTube. You have no idea that I ever wrote, especially younger kids out there. I don't write as much as I used to on the internet. And that's probably something I should do more of, but I just got so many shows that I do now. I mean, how many people do 4 hours of live video and audio a day? Not very many, 4 hours plus. That's kind of what I do. It takes up a lot of time. You have to do a lot of reading, a lot of prep. But Deadspin in 2004 was a website that was zany, that was irreverent, that was about why all of us loved sports so much, and it punctured the seriousness at the time of ESPN's coverage of sports and of athletes in general. And it was fabulous. It was really entertaining. And I went and became an editor at Deadspin in 2008. I was the associate editor. I didn't get along with AJ DeLorio, who would later bankrupt Gawker by posting a sex video of Hulk Hogan getting sued as a result of that posting and all of Gawker being bankrupted. But I didn't really like working with AJ. And this is no great shot at AJ. He was the managing editor. I was the associate managing editor, I think, were our titles at the time. But there would have been no OutKick if I hadn't worked at Deadspin. And when I worked at Deadspin, I decided I don't ever want anybody else to have control over what I can write or what I can say. I want to be the boss, for better or worse. And that's how I started OutKick. And I think I'm not the boss anymore, but I think most of the people who worked with me would say that I have hired, hey, Clay's given me pretty good freedom. He's been supportive. He hasn't tried to, micromanage anything that I do from a content perspective, whether you're guys doing videos or guys doing writing. I believe in content creators. I think they should have space to do their content. But the pathway from Deadspin, which was zany, funny, wacky, hysterical, in 2004, I would say up to around 2010, 12, 13-ish, then it just went off the rails. And it became a identity politics overloaded sports site. And Trump certainly put that on steroids, where everything in sports was racist, everything in sports was awful, and as a result, its audience collapsed. And I look at several of these big media brands in sports, whether it's SI, whether it's Deadspin, there couldn't have been an OutKick without, I don't think, those sites collapsing. And now OutKick is thriving. Certainly Barstool is thriving. What I would ask you is this. What left-wing sports site or left-wing sports personality actually has ever had an audience or had any success at all? And I'll write on this in a longer form piece, but Deadspin is fascinating because they used to have a huge audience. And a lot of you out there are so young, you don't remember this era. But from about 2004 to about 2012, you can make the argument, and I don't think it's a crazy one, that Deadspin was the most influential sports site on the internet. Not the biggest, but the most influential. And then it killed itself. And now there isn't a single person employed that's at Deadspin. And I would argue, and some of you are going to say, oh, you're crazy. I would argue now that OutKick is probably the most influential sports site on the internet. Not the biggest. I don't know. We're one of the 10 biggest. And people say, oh, what do you mean? Like, all these sites roll up their traffic together, so it's kind of hard to keep track of. But what does CBS do? Can you think of a CBS sports story that you've been like, wow, that was crazy. They really kind of changed things. ESPN doesn't even hardly break news anymore. And I'm talking about like something other than Adam Schefter reporting that so-and-so is signing with so-and-so. I mean, actually discuss sports and culture. When I say most influential, that's what I'm talking about with Deadspin. It's dead. And it went over the woke waterfall and allowed itself to be destroyed. And I think it's such an interesting lesson. It was sports, right? The toy chest of life. All you have to do is give people a reason to like something that they already like. You're not reinventing the wheel. You're not building a new electric vehicle. You're not out there trying to create AI. You are just saying, hey, you like sports. I'm going to make you like it a little bit more. You've already got the ice cream. That's sports. We're just going to be the sprinkles. We're just going to be the flavor, the added condiment on your hot dog. All they had to do was keep serving sports fans a product that they liked. And instead, they couldn't do that, and they destroyed their entire brand, and everybody got fired. And of course, the capstone of all this was arguing that a little 9-year-old kid who went to watch his favorite Kansas City Chiefs team and was wearing a headdress that had half of his face painted red and half of his face painted black, I think that kid's going to end up with a multi-million dollar settlement. In fact, I wonder whether the purchase by this European entity was already taking place because they've resolved this liability issue. I don't think there's any doubt that Deadspin sold to try to avoid that liability. And we'll see what ends up happening with this Euro company that has purchased Deadspin, what the future of Deadspin is. But the thing that astounds me about OutKick is we have no competition. We exist to serve 80% of sports fans, maybe even 90%. Everybody that isn't super woke and doesn't believe that sports are awful and racist and discriminatory and that everybody is being taken advantage of, that everybody in sports is a victim. We have no competition to serve the 75, 80, or 90% of sports fans. And one reason we have no competition is not because we're just better than other companies. It's because other companies have competed to go as far left-wing as they can, destroying their business in the process and leaving almost this entire universe to us. It's crazy. The analogy I've made is it's like OutKick discovered beer. Hey, people like beer, and no one else will make a competing beer. I don't get it. Maybe I'm just a genius building, you know, $100 million plus business. I think I just learned along the way what works, and I'm not crazy. And everybody else went crazy, and I just sat back and got filthy rich just by not being crazy. It's wild. I mean, again, it's a fascinating book. I don't have time to write a book now, but if you're out there watching this clip and you're a writer and you wanted a window into how sports went crazy, Deadspin, just telling the story of Deadspin from 2004 to this moment would be an incredible window into that collapse. All right. I love all of you. DBAP, unless you need to SBAP, I will be live 20 minutes on Clay and Buck. Always, you can watch video versions. You know this? A lot of people don't. Fox Nation, behind the paywall, you can watch the video version of my radio show every day for 3 hours. Also, you can go subscribe, clayandbuck.com. Watch all 3 hours of the video version there. I'll see you in 20 minutes, breaking down the bloodbath controversy and more. This has been OutKick, the show.